Photojournalist Stephen Clevenger, a war correspondent for many years, decided to accompany Native American soldiers headed to Iraq. He took pictures and interviewed Apache, Navajo, Osage, Pueblo, and others before, during, and after their tours. The book he created is called America's First Warriors, Native Americans and Iraq. You can see some of his photographs in a slideshow at NPR's Picture Show blog. That's at npr.org. And today, we'd like to hear from Native American soldiers in our audience. Tell us about your experiences. 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. And you can join the conversation at our website. That's at npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. Stephen Clevenger is a registered Osage and joins us now from our bureau in Dallas, Texas. Nice to have you on the program today.
Well, thank you, Neil. And appreciate you having me.
And is your Indian heritage the reason that gave you the inspiration to pursue this story?
No, it was more because I lived in New Mexico off and on for many years, and you can't help but get involved in the Native culture there.
You wrote that one of the things that sets Native Americans apart from other U.S. troops, though, is the warrior culture. How so?
Well, it's a big part of their culture. I'm talking about traditionalists here, mm-hmm. people who still maintain their culture. And it is a big part of the traditional beliefs. And the warrior is honored in their culture. And he's expected to perform his duty. And when he returns from war or service, he is honored. And he's also expected to become a leader in the community.
You also wrote about some of the interesting ceremonies and practices that Native Americans have that many of us are not familiar with, including there was one man you described sent out with a medicine bundle.
Yes. Well, this was a World War II veteran, a Navajo, and his leaving the reservation in western New Mexico, I think, may have been the first time he was actually off the reservation. And he ended up in Europe. He participated in the Omaha landings, and then later he was cut off in the Battle of the Bulge. But before he left, his grandfather, who was a warrior and survived the long walk that the Navajos had to undergo, made him a medicine bundle of corn pollen was in there, and also a small white feather from a live eagle. And he was told that should he be captured, all he had to do was to throw this white feather up in the air and he'd be able to escape. Luckily, he didn't have to use that. And he told me that as he hit the shores of Omaha, the bundle became soaked, but he still held on to it and kept it throughout the war. And when he returned to New Mexico, his grandfather took the bundle and emptied the contents around their hogan, their home, to bring good medicine to the area, to the people who lived there.
You also describe how different tribes offer warriors a different protective ceremonies before they leave for war.
Yes, not all tribes use the medicine bundles. For example, the Osages, they offer dances and honor the people who are going off, and they do the same for them when they return.
Because the protections have to be taken off.
Well, not so much with the Osages, but with the Navajos, that's true.
Uh-huh.
They aren't. In the ancient times, the warriors returning from battle, they were kept away from the other members of the tribe, and they had to undergo several days and nights of various purification ceremonies to eliminate those bad feelings that they may have picked up during their battle experience. But today that's been drastically reduced to just one evening of ceremonies given by a medicine man. And sometimes if they feel it's necessary, they'll have a dance.
And how many of these traditionalists, to what degree do these traditionalist beliefs still hold sway?
Well, you get a mixture. There's a lot of people who are in the Native American church, and they also hold on to their traditional beliefs, and I assume they're in other Christian churches. But again, the traditionalists, they continue to practice their prayers and such. One of the men in the book he told me how every morning he had a shift that allowed him to be up when the sun came up. He would say a prayer and sprinkle a little corn pollen in the air.
One of the questions that you raise is why should a people who have suffered so terribly at the hands of the U.S. government defend that government?
Well, that was one of the questions I asked everyone, and I got a variety of answers. Some people said, well, I'm a soldier. What happened in the past no longer matters. Others said that they weren't really fighting for the U.S. government. They were fighting for the nation. They were fighting for their people. They were fighting for their way of life.
It is also interesting that many of these people are obviously from tribal cultures, North American tribal cultures. Iraq is in many places a modern society, but in other places it is very tribal too.
Yes. The men and women that I was with in Iraq, though, they had the duty of guarding the detainees. So they weren't going outside the wire to really integrate themselves with the locals. Of course, they had a lot of close contact with the prisoners.
And these were men and women from National Guard units?
Yes, a National Guard unit out of Rio Rancho in New Mexico. Rio Rancho is just a little bit above Albuquerque. But because there's such a small population in New Mexico, these people in particular, the natives, they came mostly from western New Mexico. The majority of them were Navajos, and there were a number of Pueblo peoples as well.
And we're happy to report that the unit arrived back home intact.
Yes, they did.
Let's see if we can get some callers in on the conversation. We're talking with Stephen Clevenger. His book is America's First Warriors, Native Americans and Iraq, 800-989-8255. We'd like to hear from Native American warriors about their experiences. Give us a call and send us an email, talk@npr.org. I guess we'll begin with Sam. Sam's with us from St. Francisville in Louisiana.
Correct.
Go ahead, please.
I'm neither Native American nor have I ever served in the armed forces. But I'd like to ask the author how Native American servicemen try to reconcile the U.S. government's past persecution of Native Americans while serving the very armed forces that carry out those policies. How do they kind of get around that conflict?
Well, as I said, some of them don't think about it. They say what happened in the past is in the past. Others have told me that they weren't fighting for the U.S. government, but they were fighting for their nation, for their land, for their people, for their way of life. Now, these people I'm talking about, they're traditionalists, and most of them do live on reservations, although there are exceptions.
So it didn't seem to be a big issue for them?
No, not really.
All right, Sam, thanks very much for the phone call. Appreciate
it. Thank you very much, Mr. Conan, for letting me be on your show.
Okay, thanks for listening. And as you you talked to them before they went and then during their tour and then after they came home, did they suffer the same kinds of post-combat problems that so many, we hear about so many people coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan?
Unfortunately, a lot of them do. My thesis when I went into this project was that because of the support from their people and the various ceremonies that they would go through before and after, that possibly they could reintegrate into society more easily than non-natives. But I found that not to be true. The ceremonies, I was told, they do help, but it's not a cure-all. They still have problems. And, you know, there are resources from the VA, but they're limited. Mm-hmm. And as far as the Indian Health Services go, they are very limited. I was talking to a psychiatrist at the Indian Hospital in Santa Fe, and they have two people who work with the mental health services for a total of 50,000 people in their area.
That's quite that's a difficult proportion.
Yes.
Let's see if we can go quickly to this is Rodney with us from Daly City in California.
Good afternoon. I just wanted to say you guys caught my attention because last year my father, who was 87 in Choctaw, died. And when I was going through all of his things, my father was a very secretive person, and we discovered all sorts of wonderful things about his service in the military using the Choctaw Code Talkers. And also, he had prepared for me, before he died, a medicine bundle, which he gave to me, and I also found his, which he had had for, I guess, for his whole life. But none of us knew about this stuff. It was just really, really interesting to find these things and look at it, and I'm glad you guys are talking about it.
So your father was one of the Navajo Code Talkers who served in the Pacific?
He was Choctaw.
Uh-huh.
I'm not really too clear on the details of how the Choctaws were involved in that, but apparently they were using him because of his understanding of Choctaw in the same way the Navajo Code Talkers were. That's my understanding anyway.
Okay. Thanks very much for the call, and we're glad you found out some of your dad's past.
Yes, there were other Code Talkers besides the Navajo. I know that some Code Talkers were used in World War I, I believe. And then, as the listener noted, the Choctaws, participated in Europe, but I'm not certain about that.
Native American speakers used to speak to each other across open radio circuits on the belief that the Germans and the Japanese would not be able to understand them. And as I understand, it worked perfectly.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Stephen Clevenger, thank you very much for your time today, and good luck with your book.
Thank you.
Stephen Clevenger's book is called America's First Warriors, Native Americans and Iraq. You can see a slideshow of his photographs at npr.org at our Picture Show blog. And he joined us today from our bureau in Dallas. Up next, your letters. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.